Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association and by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pimble. The House and Senate have their own versions of a bill with a similar purpose. They are known as companion bills. This week, both chambers advanced controversial companion bills with exactly the same language in a short period of time. One pair is about election laws, and the other about renewable fuels.
And I will apologize. I know we will probably not be able to allow everybody to talk.
In the House Ways and Means Subcommittee, Chair Republican Representative Lee Hine introduces a bill that would decrease availability of non-renewable blended gasoline and diesel. These are fuels that, in the case of gasoline, don't have ethanol added, which comes from corn. For diesel, oil from soybeans is added to create biodiesel. Representative Hine acknowledges there isn't enough time for all the people who are here to speak in the 30 minutes allotted.
We'd appreciate your name, who you represent, and be as brief as you can, but still take the time to get your point across.
This bill is from the governor. It will require filling stations to relabel fuel that is not a biofuel as restricted use fuel. For example, a pump selling gasoline would have to have a label for non-ethanol blended gasoline as restricted use gasoline. The bill only allows one pump at the station to have a non-ethanol blended gasoline. The same applies for biodiesel.
Some of the conversations I've heard is that this is a mandate. I just want to be the first to say this is not a mandate.
The policy director for Governor Reynolds is Logan Shine.
Does not require fuel retailers to sell certain products, nor does it ban them from selling certain products.
But Matt McKinney from the convenience chain stores Come and Go says it limits how much gasoline they can sell that doesn't include ethanol.
The requirements, mandates that are in this bill, whatever we want to call it, they're directives on what we can offer and what we can't offer.
To increase the number of pumps, a station will have to install new systems to accommodate gas with higher blends of ethanol, like E85, which contains 85% of fuel derived from corn. Doug Beach from Casey's General Stores says their chain won't be able to convert that many pumps over the next couple of years.
We believe more infrastructure is needed. The industry believes it would cost $1 billion to deal with the infrastructure needs caused by this bill. Even a business publicly traded like Casey's does not have that kind of capital to deal with those kind of issues.
Gasoline with ethanol tends to cost less per gallon, but Delia Meyer from the Iowa 80 truck stop in eastern Iowa says that's not the case with biodiesel.
People don't understand is biodiesel is often, and right now, $2 more a gallon than diesel fuel. So when you're mixing in a higher product, you're raising the price. And so it's not like gasoline and ethanol. It's completely different. Iowa's truck stop industry has worked cooperatively with the renewable fuels industry over the last decade or more to create incentives to increase the use of biodiesel. And that partnership has worked for us for both parties, for both industries, very well. And in fact, biodiesel usage in Iowa is nearly doubled in the last 6 years. I'm wondering why we're shifting strategies when we're doing something that's very successful. Why do we need a heavy-handed government mandate approach?
Nick Bowdish is the president of an ethanol plant in Atlantic called Elite Octane and supports this bill.
Some of the people in this room are opposed to the bill in its current form, not because they oppose biofuels, but just some of the specific metrics. I think that when I look at this bill, what's very important for everyone to understand is there's 2,451 retailers in this state, and only 233 are offering unleaded 88, a 15% blend of ethanol.
Bradley Wilson is the president of Western Iowa Energy in Wall Lake, a company that uses soybeans to make biodiesel.
The statewide standard is a logical next step, allowing our state to reap the benefits that the biofuels industry provides. The standard would further support good-paying jobs like those at my plant in rural Iowa, and our community needs those jobs. We are one of the reasons Wall Lake continues to thrive. This policy would also boost farm income while reducing carbon emissions, improving our fuel supply, and enabling millions of taxpayer dollars to be reallocated towards infrastructure.
This bill does allow for some funding and tax credits for stations to convert their pumps to accommodate renewable fuels. With time limited to 30 minutes, Chair of the Subcommittee, Representative Lee Hine, says this bill will advance, but it needs to be modified.
I can guarantee you that the bill in its current form probably will make, there will be some changes made.
A couple of hours later, a Senate subcommittee has a 30-minute meeting for a bill with exactly the same language. Many that spoke at the House meeting reiterate or expand their points, like Doug Beach from Casey's General Stores. Beach says there is still demand for fuels that don't have ethanol or biodiesel.
The reason why it won't boost sales is because of it limits the amount that can be sold in the rural areas. The concern is older stations and legacy stations in rural Iowa.
Matt Steinfeld from Iowa Farm Bureau supports this bill because it promotes biofuels.
As you guys know, Iowa is the number one producer of biofuels, but we are behind many other states when it comes to market share of biofuels. We're also behind several other states when it comes to policies that promote our biofuels. Our members recognize that there's a lot more that we could be doing here in Iowa to promote our homegrown fuels.
But Drew Klein from Americans for Prosperity opposes this bill and calls it a stiff, draconian regulation.
We're using regulation instead to manipulate the market and choose who succeeds and potentially, in this bill, who fails. We've had a robust conversation over the last year about heavy-handed mandates and regulations, and I've been in the camp as it relates to COVID that says informed adults should be able to make decisions about the risks and the choices that they want. I think many of you have been in that same boat. The bill in front of us, though, moves us in the opposite direction. Instead of allowing adults to make decisions about what fuel they put in their vehicle with the information available to them, we are restricting choice by restricting the availability of it at retail.
The chair of this subcommittee, Republican Senator Dan Zumbach, says this bill as written needs changes.
It is vividly clear we appreciate biodiesels. It's clear we want to sell more biodiesel, and it's clear we can find a solution to get there. There are many moving parts in this bill, and those of you that have read it and looked at it, there's several pages of amounts, times, and all of those things are adjustable. I'm going to sign this bill to move it forward with you knowing that this bill will be adjusted, that the framework you see it today clearly to me is not acceptable the way the framework is built. But I think we can get there. We want to sell more biofuels. We want to make it profitable for our ag community, for our retailers, and we want choices for our consumers. And I truly believe we can get there with the folks in this room.
This bill can now be discussed and amended in the full Senate Agriculture Committee. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble.
Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio, a statewide network powered by its listeners. Become a member today to support the reporting you hear on this podcast at iowapublicradio.org/donate.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, and by the Iowa Bankers Association. Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa communities, and they're backed by Iowa banks. See how banks are helping small businesses see a stronger tomorrow at iowabankers.com.
Thank you all for being here. I'll bring SSB 1199 to order.
On a Wednesday afternoon, Republican Senator Robbie Smith leads a state government subcommittee panel.
I do want to remind everybody that at 3 o'clock, there's a state government committee. So we have 30 minutes to hear from Iowans, hear from senators about this bill.
It's a large bill about elections and voting. It has 58 sections.
This bill addresses conduct of elections, specifically on election misconduct, nomination requirements, absentee ballot voting, voter list maintenance requirements, and election enforcement and authority. Who would like to speak first on this? Senator Yoakum?
Senator Pam Yoakum is the Democrat on this 3-member subcommittee panel.
Considering there's 65 participants, I think we should let the public speak, but thank you for the offer.
In the first minute, the Zoom conference call indicates there are 65 people watching, including the legislators and members of the media.
If you'd like to speak, go to the reaction and please virtually raise your hand.
As it has been during this session, all Senate subcommittees do not allow in-person attendance, but do allow lobbyists and members of the public to participate using the Zoom video conference software.
The legislature is demonstrating to Iowans its commitment to high integrity, fair elections in our state.
Andy Conlin speaks in favor of the bill. He's from Opportunity Solutions Project that is based out of Florida. It has lobbyists in various states advocating for bills often aligned with conservative Republicans.
We think one of the very important pieces of this bill is that it will help ensure uniformity of elections across the state.
This bill would apply penalties to some existing rules. For example, if a county auditor sends a voter an absentee ballot request and pre-fills information like name, it now becomes a felony punishable by up to $10,000.
I think this bill does several important things to make a good election system better.
Alan Ostergren is a lawyer who was part of the legal team for Representative Marionette Miller Meeks. She's the former Iowa State Senator who earlier this year was provisionally seated in the U.S. House of Representatives after a tight race with a 6-vote difference.
It provides some good mechanisms for making sure that the voting rolls are kept up to date.
This bill proposes to begin the process of placing someone as an inactive voter if they miss one general election. The Secretary of State would send the voter a card in the mail to fill out in this case, and if it's not returned, they would be taken off the active voter roll.
I can't think of a single group that would benefit from this law.
Myrna Loreline is the former president of the Linn County League of Women Voters. This bill proposes to reduce early voting from 29 days to 18.
Most people, especially those in direct service jobs, find it difficult to vote in person on election day. Persons of color, parents of young children, caregivers, and those not lucky enough to have access to a computer and a printer would be especially affected.
Concerning the new penalties in this bill, they would apply to many existing rules that are now part of Iowa Code in chapters 39 through 53. Ryan Doctor is president of the Iowa Association of County Auditors.
The bill makes the failure to perform any election duty a crime under the code. If we do not adhere to that for code chapters 39 through 53, we make mistakes at times, and the severe penalties may deter good qualified people from public service.
The bill requires the Iowa Attorney General's office to investigate and prosecute. Lynn Hicks is the communications director for the Attorney General.
We know that we do not have the current resources to do that. We don't have an investigator. We would have most likely to have hire another attorney, assistant attorney general, to do this. We have gotten very few calls actually alleging 39A election misconduct violations. And most of the calls we get are people saying, well, what if this happens? The hypothetical. So, but we think that would change very quickly with this bill, and it would create a burden for our office.
39A is another reference to a chapter in Iowa Code about elections. Another proposal in this bill prohibits county auditors from mailing absentee ballot request forms. These are not ballots, but a form for someone to fill out and return to the auditor so a voting ballot can be sent. Last year, every registered Iowa voter was sent an absentee ballot request form.
I think this is incredibly important.
Republican Senator Jason Schultz is one of the three panelists on this subcommittee and signs to advance this bill to the full committee.
I think myself that Iowans' votes were disenfranchised by some shady dealings in 5 cities around the country that I think shows what happens when you don't strengthen your election system, when you allow people to game elections to the point that they did in cities such as Philadelphia.
After the presidential election, former President Trump made allegations of voter fraud after his opponent Joe Biden made gains in the vote totals after mail-in votes were counted. Pennsylvania is one state where Trump lost. Trump also filed dozens of lawsuits claiming election fraud that were dismissed. In this subcommittee, the bill advances. The next day, it is in the full Senate State Government Committee.
There were no credible complaints about our election security. Not one. Not one.
Democratic Senator Pam Yoakum says the last election in Iowa was praised by the Republican Secretary of State.
This was an election like no other, and everyone stepped up. Record turnout during a pandemic is an amazing achievement, and overall the process went very smoothly in Iowa. So what's up? Why are Republican members of the state Senate rushing to make it harder to vote, provide less time to vote, and make it easier to kick Iowans off the list of voters?
Republican Senator Robbie Smith says one reason penalties are required for existing laws is because of a few Iowa county auditors who did not send blank absentee request forms to voters.
The state cannot have a handful of auditors obstruct those goals to the detriment of Iowa voters. Those auditors' inability to follow the law or their belief that they have power to create their own laws or believe they have veto authority over our laws caused unnecessary confusion and wasteful spending of tax dollars in 2020.
The Trump administration sued Iowa county auditors that sent absentee ballot request forms that had some information filled out. Those auditors had to resend tens of thousands of blank forms to those voters. Senator Smith says this bill has the potential to give more people a chance to vote.
If you're in a hospital, 4 days to 10 days, you can't vote in the state of Iowa if you're admitted to a hospital right now. We're going to allow more people to vote. Missigned affidavits that come in, cut off is 5 p.m. Monday, day before the election. Their vote would not count. We're extending that deadline. More people's vote will count under this. But we don't hear those talking points.
The bill passes this committee and is now eligible for floor debate. On Wednesday, a bill with the same language comes before a House subcommittee for an hour and a half meeting.
The biggest question I've been asked so far is why? Excuse me. Why do we need an election bill after a successful election?
Republican Representative Bobby Kaufman compares public elections to private sector business.
Government should be ran like a business. So when it comes to election law, I take my responsibility as the chair of the committee that oversees election law very seriously. And so I'm treating the 2020 election like a business. And that business was very successful. And that business in the private sector, after successful endeavors, doesn't go on autopilot. It doesn't just sit there and be allowed to permeate and hope that it replicates itself again. Successful businesses, much like successful elections, require reviews. And that's what we have done. That's what I have done. That's what Senator Smith has done and why we have companion language.
House subcommittees are streamed with a system called WebEx, but this system presents audio in a way that can be harder to understand than what the Senate provides. Also, unlike the Senate, House subcommittees only allow people to speak if they are in person and do not accept real-time audio, video, or written chat comments to be included during the meeting. Amy Campbell is at this evening subcommittee. She's a lobbyist for League of Women Voters, AARP, and the Area Agencies of Aging. She has many objections to this bill, including the bill's 52nd section.
Section 52 prohibits anyone other than the person's caregiver or family member to deliver a voted absentee ballot. Not all older Iowans have family members in town or regrettably even in the state, and they may be living independently and have no caregiver. Iowans rely on neighbors and friends and people from their church and their community to help fill in for family. I would ask that you please consider adding a friend or allowing auditors to train volunteers that could go out and pick up a ballot request or a voted ballot.
This section states only the voter, someone living in the same household, immediate family member, or the voter's caretaker can return a completed ballot in a mail slot or directly to the county auditor's office. If anyone else mails or returns the ballot, it would be election misconduct. Representative Kaufman indicates there may be changes or compromises coming in this bill. Democratic Representative Mary Masher asks about the early voting proposal. In the bill, it reduces it to 18 days versus the 29 presently in place.
The days that are in the bill are 18.
Yes.
Is that open to change?
There are possibilities based on scenarios where those days could go up by a couple.
Okay. And the reason we ask is that turnaround time for getting a ballot in and seeing that there's a problem and then getting someone in to correct it, especially for our elderly and disabilities community, that may be a really big challenge or a very difficult challenge for them.
That conversation is not closed.
Okay. And I would hope that we'd be open to something more than 18 and closer to 29.
Probably not going to get that far.
But just having said that, I'm glad to hear that you're open to that and that that's a possibility.
The bill advances from the subcommittee, and the next day it comes before the full state government committee. Democratic Representative Christina Bohannon brings up the aspect that would begin the process of removing a voter from the active voter roll if they miss one general election.
There are a lot of people who only vote in the presidential election. There are people who have only been voting in the presidential election for their entire adult lives. We could have people who are 75 years old who have been literally doing this for, 50 years or more. And suddenly now we're saying you can't do that without risking your active registration. And they are going to have to take affirmative steps to keep doing something that they have been doing their entire adult lives.
Democratic Representative Jennifer Confirst says overall, the bill makes it harder to vote.
My question is, why create the barriers? If they're easy to overcome, I get that, but why establish them at all? Because I do believe that voting access should be the goal.
Representative Kaufman closes the committee by saying any changes will appear as amendments when it is debated on the House floor.
I do believe that House City Bill 213 is going to ensure that Iowans, all Iowans, can have faith in their election process and in the election integrity. I believe that House City Bill 213 absolutely protects Iowans' very sacred right to vote. And finally, I adamantly, ardently, and judiciously believe that House City Bill 213 does not suppress one single vote.
The bill passes the full committee. This makes the bill eligible for House debate. It is expected the House and Senate will debate their versions of the bill within a week. This is Under the Golden Dome, a look at some of the legislative movements at the Capitol. This series often relies on information from our Statehouse reporter, Katerina Sestarik. She has many stories throughout the week you can read on our website, iowapublicradio.org. This week, we had some help from Katie Pikus. Michael Leland is the script editor. Digital team support comes from Matt Siren and Lindsay Moon. I hope the show is working for you. It's designed to focus on a few issues per episode to give you a better idea of what the legislative process sounds like, and we keep it to less than half an hour so it's not too overwhelming. So keep up with the session by subscribing to this podcast with your favorite podcast listening program. I'm John Pimble. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.